four different people to come up and share a little longer share on their experience in that process of coming to believe. And we're going to have a little break after each one where we're going to invite you to come up and share anything that may have brought up for you. So this becomes a workshop of the whole. Everybody's going to get a chance to share if they want to. Now, in the interest of time, what we're going to ask people to do, and to help Mark out, because Mark works really hard at taping this stuff. And one of the biggest obstacles in making that tape work is when we have dead spots. So what we're going to ask people to do is, if you are feeling like you're going to want to come up and share, we have some chairs up here. Please come up and be in the chair, and that way, when the person before you is done sharing, you're a couple steps from the mic, and we can minimize those dead spots on the tape. It's really, really helpful to us and especially to Mark. Give him a wave, Mark. There. Now, look at him. Like, don't you want to help him out?
Don't spoil him.
Oh, his wife says don't spoil him. Okay, so when we talk about coming to believe, one of the things that a lot of us have when we get here is obstacles to belief, like things that get in the way of our being able or willing to really wholeheartedly believe that there's a power out there that can restore us to sanity. And our first guy that's going to speak is a fellow that I met here a few years ago. And in the time that we've known each other, I've got to know him fairly well. I've heard his story several times. Watched him walk through some pretty severe difficulties. Had him sleeping in my basement for about a month, and those late night talks. those late night talks that we're talking about exactly this kind of stuff. So when I started thinking about who can talk about those obstacles, Marty was the first guy that came to mind. So Marty, with that, I'd like to call you up to share.
Hello again. I am Marty. Yeah, it's great to be here. And when Richard asked if I would do this, the first thing that came to mind was yes. But it was because he framed it in such a nice way, He's very good at that. So I didn't do any thinking about this until last night, and I realized, oh, I have to do this tomorrow, because I was preoccupied with the workshop I'm doing this afternoon on humor and realized I've kind of let this drop. So last night I diligently went through and collected some thoughts, and I've spoken on this before, and so it's not something new to me. It's just my story. But I'm going to focus it on the came to believe aspect of my story. And when I was a kid growing up, I went to Sunday school, and so I learned the idea of what God was, but it was all in my head, and when I grew up, I never had an experience of God. I didn't know what God was supposed to feel like. And so I had no reference point, no understanding of what spirituality or God was supposed to mean internally. I had an academic knowledge of God, and the only kind of God, the only time I believed when I got older, was when you said you didn't believe. Then I believed, because I could argue about it with you, right? I mean, that was my intellectualization of God. And so when I came into the program, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. My world was crashing down. I had been in a blackout. I was apparently harassing the cleaning lady. I was looking at potential charges. I had creditors calling me all the time. I had been eating rice with no butter for the past week, and I did not want to get out of bed. And so for me, it was kind of amazing that when I was laying there and I felt the impact of that day, I actually thought to pray to God. Like, that's what came into my mind. I asked for help. It was like a desperation. And to me, it's a theme for my coming to believe. When there is darkness and pain and crisis and surrender, that's when I seem to find God. Because I'm open to seeking in a different way, and in an honest way, and in a desperate way. So I came into AA, and I won't tell you my my struggles catching on, but it took a while. But what attracted me, what I started to understand in terms of God and spirituality, I could see a lightness of being in people. I could see a genuine happiness. And I could associate that with something real and tangible, that there's something going on here. And I could relate to the stories. And so I figured, well, if they can make this happen in their life, you know, maybe that can work for me. So I kind of adopted that kind of a God to start with, because that's the only thing that made sense. And it, again, I didn't really have a frame of reference, but it just slowly started to feel like something was happening. And then I started working through the steps, and I was asked to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God. And so what did that mean? Well, at that point in my life, the care of God meant kind of the now I lay me down to sleep God. You know, I give you my will and my life and you take care of me. So it's kind of a quid pro quo, kind of a, you know, I'll pray to you, you take care of me kind of God. And that worked okay for a while. You know, it didn't really totally make sense. There were some issues with that God of the good parking spots that I had. But yet and there was nothing to challenge that belief at that time. And as I worked through the steps, and I got through step 4 and 5, which I like to think of it as, and you know, this is maybe a little bit religious overtones, but I like to think of it as kind of when I did my 4 and 5, I started to wash the sin stains off my soul. And those are the things that kept me from experiencing and feeling God. Once I was able to get rid of that stuff and begin to clear that off of my soul, then I could start to experience God. And that was the program starting to work in me. But I still didn't really understand what I was believing in. And 10 years ago, my daughter died. And my understanding of God now had to become different. It was all one thing when it was horrible tragedies happening on the news to other people, when, you know, these awful things were. But I didn't ever have to try to figure it out. I could just believe in that big mystery that everything happens for a reason, God. But now that this was here, I couldn't believe in that God anymore. So suddenly I had to understand God in a different way. And again, it was darkness and pain and crisis and surrender. And I came to a point where it was either drink, kill myself, or get out of this. And fortunately, I had been in the program long enough that that I started to do something about it. Here's a spoiler alert. This is the beginning, the end of my marriage, just so you know. And so I understand now why the statistics say why there's so few people who survive it. And it's not the direct consequences. It's the split that happened with us at this time. And I had to find my own way through my own pain. And I found it through books. Especially there was a book I read, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. Kushner really helped. And I reached out to other people in the program, other guys who'd gone through the kinds of tragic loss that I had experienced. I needed to seek that. And I had to reimagine God, not as a capricious God who understood, who was going to make decisions of life or death, who was going to intervene at that level, who was going to micromanage. I had to understand God the kind of God that was that would that I could put my life and my will into the care of, as in the loving care of. That God, that was not my God anymore. My God was not the God that was going to take care of me when I was driving drunk. Because why was I so special, right? I mean, I used to kind of think that, but I don't anymore. I just was lucky and actually a pretty good drunk driver. I mean, we all have skills, right? So for me, the real key, though, as well, was, I literally thank God for the steps, for step 11 in particular. Because step 11 is what I have now built my my new understanding of God around. And that is, I pray only for the power of God's will and the ability to carry that out with God's help. That's it. That's all I pray for. And so last year when my brother got sick with cancer in July, not once did I pray to God for him to be recovered. And so when he died in September, I didn't have to blame God. I didn't have to carry that anger or resentment. What I could do then is allow God to work through me during that time. That is how I understand God. God is love. That's really what it is for me. It's a little more than that. It's kind of a spiritual love. It's a connectedness that I have a capacity to be able to be with people in a different way, and there's an intuitiveness to it. So it's not quite that. But it really isn't my God isn't the miracles God, because if I start looking at that, and I mean the big M miracles, not the miracle of my own recovery, but the miracle of, I need you to save my brother. That's not my God. So when I look at when I look at God and what and where God is for me, one of the things that last year when my brother was really sick, it allowed me, what God provided for me specifically was a capacity to love others, to be there with my family in a different way. I am a different person emotionally in terms of my ability to give and receive love. Those are the gifts that God has given me. I was able to tell my brother that I loved him and be there as he died and hold his hand. You know, I didn't run away. I didn't, I was able to cry. I mean, for me, that's a big deal. You'll see, I'm not crying now. Like, for me in public, around anyone, it's hard, right? It's like a gag reflex for me. It's like the tears start coming. It's like, nope, they're not coming. You know, it's just like, and that for me is, though, what God provides. I am opening up and continue to open up emotionally. So I'm sure I'm getting close to the end of my time here. So the one last thing I'll say is God also has shown me that God is love, but God doesn't always feel like love. That's another thing I've learned. And I mean it by this. Sometimes the loving thing is the hard thing and the thing I don't want to do. And in terms of last year when I came into Al-Anon and when I was at another crisis point of darkness and pain and surrender, I had to leave my relationship, my marriage of 20 years. I had to come to that knowledge. I can remember saying words of how we were not going to get back together again when everything in me was screaming because of the fear and the uncertainty. To not say those words, to give it an out, to do all the things I used to do, to say, oh, well, maybe, and soften the blow and all of those things, right? But I didn't do that. And that to me is God working in a loving way, but a hard way, and allowing me to see one of the things I've really adopted and this last year is I do not know my best future. It's a prayer that I say. And I don't mean that as in God is going to take care of it, but I allow myself to try to focus every day on letting life unfold and not try to take my will that leads to an outcome. And that's what happened in this relationship. My will always bent around being in that relationship and that outcome. And so I could never get past where God's will may have taken me, because I wasn't willing to let life unfold until I was willing to accept something that I didn't want to accept. And so for me, that is God in action in a way that is hard. But today, right now, this is the best life that I've ever had. And it's not easy, and there's hard days, but it is the best life that I've ever had because I really try to practice that. And the last thing I'll say is, in terms of what I practiced as well, this is just my story. This is my experience with God. I don't have the answers. And I know my answers have to be shaped by my own reality and experience. And so whatever works for you, I think that's awesome. But this is not the God that I necessarily wanted to have. It's the God that I have to have, because I have to have a God that makes sense to me based on my life experiences. But I'll say this as well. I am and continue to be open to evolving my thinking and my beliefs as new life experiences come. I mean, I often will say, people will say, well, I believe it all happened for a reason. Well, I personally don't believe that, but I kind of have a workaround. I mean, I work for the federal government, so I always got workarounds, you know. It's like when my brother was dying, I wasn't going to pray for him, but if you wanted to pray for him, I was okay with that, right? Like, I have workarounds, and that's what it is. Like, for me, I want to believe that I can take meaning out of things. I took things from my brother's death. When he died, I have adopted some of the best parts of him and tried to put those into me. So I can find meaning. But if I start thinking that everything happened for a reason, I'm right back to thinking that there's an outcome that my life is going to be at. And so for me, the important thing is I have to let life happen and try and enjoy the ride. So thank you very much.
So at this point, we open up the mic, and anybody who feels like they have something they'd like to share is welcome to come up. Again, we'll ask you to take up a share so that we minimize the wait time in between sharings. And frankly, if you don't come up, what's probably going to happen is I'm going to do a lot of filler talk and bore the crap out of you, and you won't get your money's worth out of the CDs you're going to buy. So. With that, Nikki would like to come up and share.
Hi, my name's Nikki.
Hi, Nikki.
I was writing about this the other day, and it came to me when Marty was talking about it, that I was talking about how I came to program wearing my old shoes. You know, they were comfy and worn in, and there's kind of a tear on the side and a hole in the top, and the treads are kind of worn off. And they're comfortable and I know them. And so I came here and I had my one tool, which was try that again harder. And it just wasn't working for me any longer. And so I was offered some new tools. I was offered some new things. I was really excited about trying to implement them. And I even started to find out how this new tool works and where I might be able to use it. And so I kind of referenced that to, I went out and I decided, I'm going to make a decision, I'm going to buy me some new shoes, you know, and I was excited about those shoes. I was going to go out and I was going to buy them, and they were fancy pants shoes, and they were comfortable, and they feel good when they're on. I feel good when they're on. I feel connected. I take pictures of my shoes and send them to my friends, you know. I'm happy about them. I buy a new outfit to go with my shoes because I feel like this is right. I pick out my new outfit and I get up for the day and I'm gonna go see my friends and I'm walking around. And it's not until my socks get wet that I recognize that I put on my old shoes again today. And so my recovery has been like that for me. I feel elated. I feel connected. I feel profound, but it's like a ribbon that kind of transcends through the universe, and every once in a while, I'm able to just catch like a fingernail catch of it, and I feel like, but I gotta hold on to it because it kind of fades for me as I continue to learn how to harness these new tools. I have to continue to practice that over and over again. I have to continue to look for inspiration. I have to continue to hear what you say to me so that I can find another way path back to that, God that I've decided, who I've named her, who I've discovered loves me completely and infinitely in this moment, and most of all in the moments where I hurt the most, where I have come to learn that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be in those moments. Because it's easy to believe that we're connected to God when we got our new shoes on and we're cruising down the street, right? But it's when your socks are wet and God says, that's okay. That's okay. And it's okay to stumble. And it's okay to kind of spin around and come back. And there's no judgment here on that. And when I've got my covers on my face and they're my covers, that everyone just loves me and says, yeah, that sounds good. Go with that idea until it doesn't serve you any longer. And then I'm like, I have these covers on my face. And my sponsor goes, yeah. And I love you. And I'm glad that you're here where you are now in this moment. And so I'm grateful for my recovery. I'm grateful for the parts that are hard. I'm grateful for the moments that I am so uncomfortable that all I have left to do in that moment is surrender, because that's all I got. And every time I do that, I fall a little bit more closer to God. I start to polish away the parts of me that don't serve me. You know, I was talking with Faraday one day and I was like, I don't want to have to give this up. I worked really hard to acquire whatever this cool aspect I was working at. I don't want to have to let go one more time while someone else gets to hold on to their crap that they keep get to do. And she's like, yeah, but it's not you pulling away that. That's what's not you. That's you peeling away closer to your authentic self. We've had those tools for so long. They are comfortable, but when they don't serve us, it's okay to let them go. And I'm grateful for those messages that I hear and that I carry with me. So I appreciate you for letting me share today. Thank you.
I was just sitting there reflecting on one of those long talks that Marty and I had in my basement one night about the Santa Claus God. You remember that?
Yeah.
The idea that you know, I don't think I can get well with the Santa Claus God, with the God that makes my car run better. That please let this be a winning ticket. You know, because what happens if my car breaks down? What happens if that lottery ticket isn't a winner? You know, my higher power has abandoned me utterly. Right, and instead, what I end up with, for me, is a higher power who, you know, life happens to me, and that higher power wants the best for me and is there constantly providing guidance and strength if I just shut up and listen. So, I don't know if anybody else wants to come up at this point. If not, we'll move on. It's been my observation that a lot of us come here afraid of God, angry at God. We end up with that higher power that I don't want to pray to him. He'll know where I am, right? Because he's sitting up there in a cloud somewhere just waiting for me to step out of line, and then he's going to zap me. And, you know, I one time in early recovery, I had the privilege of watching somebody walk through that in a fundamental and a really meaningful way to me, because I to be honest, I was sleeping with her at the time. and with that, I'd like to call up the lady I share my life with, Karen, to come up and share.
Yeah, the original 13th step. Hi, everybody. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon, and my name is Karen.
Hi, Karen.
I could relate to some of the stuff that Marty had to say, largely because I didn't hear about doing this from Richard or being asked until last night, actually. And we were on the way home, and I had already hit the wall. And he asked me if I would care to do this today. And my first response is automatically, not particularly. You know, but it seemed to be a reasonable Al-Anon request. And there's that part of me that says I can't grow and remain healthy on yesterday's recovery. That doesn't have my approval. But it's the truth. You know, the whole idea of the process of coming to believe. I grew up in a home where my parents loved me very much. I didn't grow up in a home that was affected directly by the family disease of alcoholism. Actually, that's not true. I grew up affected by the family disease of alcoholism. My parents were not active. They weren't alcoholics. But I had an awful lot of other stuff in my home. My parents always took us to church. I remember my father, you know, every Sunday, it was, come on, get up. You can have some porridge. And it's like, oh, God. You know, porridge every Sunday. We got to go to church every Sunday. And we did. We went to church every Sunday. And my parents taught me an awful lot of things that are very valuable. They taught me about God to the very best of their ability. And I heard a lot of stuff that I don't really know if that's what they intended to teach me, but it is what I had heard. You know, God loves you very, very much, but don't you step out of line or God's going to throw a lightning bolt at you. You know, I remember one time my mother, she wasn't very impressed with my sister's current boyfriend and some of the stuff my sister was doing at the time. And so my mother said she prayed to God about the situation, and her prayers were answered. Because you see, that fellow that my sister was seeing had a motorcycle accident and ended the relationship. And that's the kind of God we had. I know there's a bit of pieces of me that don't really want to share everything that happened in my home. Because some of it was so scary in terms of God stuff that I blocked big, big portions of it. When I was going into grade 12 that summer, my sister got married. She's a year older than me. And she was my best friend, and she moved to Saskatoon. And I'm from a small town, and I really wanted to be with my sister. So I decided, you know, that it was in my best educational, my best thinking was to come to Saskatoon because they had better educational systems here. And my parents actually went along with this. And I got to come to Saskatoon and live in a basement suite for a while. My sister had started having problems in her marriage because her husband was never home, right? So a lot of weird stuff started to happen. My family is one of those families that have certain people are supposed to be more spiritually connected. They have this connection and they have these situations that happen to them. My sister started having these, almost like being possessed. She was seeing things, and there was that whole idea of the demons and darkness and all this strange stuff. And she was living with me in this little basement suite, and it was a very strange time. I remember my mom calling prayer lines and asking for all the sorts of help and these people coming over and the laying of the hands and the evoking of the demons. And it was a very strange time. All the focus was centered on my sister and her husband at the time. And I prayed and I prayed and prayed to God. But the message I got back, or at least I thought I got back, was that God was too busy for me. God had better things to do right now because my sister really needed God's attention, and I wasn't important. And that was a message I filed away for a while. Things got a bit better with my sister, and they joined this group. And I, of course, wanting to have the approval, joined in right along with them. And so I went to this group of people. It was I won't say the name, but they were into the laying of the hands and the speaking of tongues and all that kind of stuff. And I really tried to get into that. I really tried to get into that for a long time. What happened for me was I was sitting in a meeting one time, and you know I have a little bit of anger sometimes, just a tad, okay? So I'm trying to go along with this stuff. and it's just not feeling right. And it, things are escalating, and you know, stuff in my family of origin actually was also really weird. During this time period, we're talking about the breaking of the records, you know, the burning of books, the erasing of anything that had to do with the zodiac. All that kind of craziness was happening. So I'm at this meeting, and we had this the people were invited to come up and share their experience and strength and what God was inviting them to share. And the men were coming forward. And the women were asked to, if they thought that God might have something to say, to have it vetted through this man over here. And, you know, they might be allowed to come up. It's kind of like, oh, I'm out of mic. And, you know, the feelings and the thoughts, and it was like, all I could do was smile, right? I'm thinking, I'm getting out of here so damn fast after this sucker's gone, and I'm never, ever coming back here, because that's bullshit. So I did. I smiled, and people said afterwards, how are you? I said, fine. How are you? Fine. And I headed for that door, and it's like, screw that. If that's God, and if this is what this takes to be close to God, I'm done. I am out of here. And if this is the kind of God, and you get demons, and you get fire and brimstone and laying on hands and all that kind of crap for me, and I've been like, God says, you know, you're not good enough because I haven't got time for you. Well, I'm going to put God in a closet. I'm done. And so I did. I prepared a very nice closet for God. It was a very, very nice closet. I figured God would be very, very comfortable there. And I, you know, shoved God in because, like, God's a little bit big. So you couldn't put him in a box. I couldn't put him in a box. I wanted to put him in a box, but God was too big for the box. I put him in the closet. And I said to God, you stay there. I'm done with you, God, because what all my experience is, I invite you into my life, and I get shit. I'm done with you. So I put God in the closet. But I wanted a spiritual waking. That's a bit of a contradiction. I don't know if you noticed that. So every once in a while, what I would say is, God, are you going to behave? And I would invite God out of the closet every once in a while, because I really did want a spiritual awakening. So I'd crack open that door, and I would look at God, and I would say, God, would you like to come out? And, you know, shit would happen. I said, God, forget it. Go back in the closet. No, we can't do this. So that happened several times over the years. And then I was having a conversation with someone, and I was telling them about putting God in the closet. And I don't know what happened that day, but something changed. And it was, and I could hear the words coming from me, and they were calm. And it was, oh, honey, you can't put God in a closet. God's not in a closet. You're in the closet. And every time you invited God out of the closet, it was God inviting you out of the closet. You're not in the closet. God was inviting you out of the closet into God's world. And that started to change things for me, ever so little bit of a little bit. So when I came to program, and it was, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives had become unmanageable. Yeah, my life's unmanageable. I get that. Two, came to believe power greater than myself could restore us from sanity. Oh, yeah, okay, got that one. Three, made a decision. Yeah, got that one. Let's go to step four. Skip everything in between. You know, pretty much first week, you're on step four. Well, that doesn't work that way. I had a problem with that because, you know, I just still didn't trust the God. It was, okay, God loves me, kind of, I think. God's not in a closet anymore, but I don't know where I am with God. So I had to go back and start to say, what did I come to believe? Well, came to believe, okay, but came to believe what? That a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And some of my thinking was pretty, pretty insane. And so I needed to redefine what my higher power looked like for me. And that was really frightening. I could accept the fact that God loved me very much, but okay, what else? Because I had a very condemning God. I had accepted hand-me-down beliefs that I thought I understood from my parents. I was not questioning who I thought my higher power actually was. And for me, that was very frightening. The thought of questioning who my higher power was terrified me, because I thought if I got it wrong, God would send down that lightning bolt still and strike me dead. I was afraid to go down certain aisles in a bookstore. I mean, there was an aisle called other, like religious literature and occult, and I stood at the front of that aisle and shook in fear because I wanted to go down that aisle. I wanted to explore, but I didn't feel as though I could because I was afraid God was going to kill me. Some God. No wonder I had a problem going forward in this step 3 and 4. How can you turn your will in your life? I couldn't. Over to care of God or something like that. What for? So I had to go back and say, how do I want my higher power to look? Now, I don't have to understand the entirety of my God, because if I can do that, my God's very small. But I have to have a basic concept of who I want my higher power to be. And Al-Anon gave me permission, after coming to these rooms for some time, to start to do that. Just to start. Who is my higher power? What do I want my higher power to look like? So I sat down with pen and paper, and I started to write what I call a job description, but it's really more of a character description of what my higher power should be. And the very first thing is, my God loves me unconditionally. My God does not set me up for tests. I really don't believe that. I don't have a testing God. Life tests me. Life presents me with lots of opportunities to learn. And my higher power is there to hold my hand. I also believe that my higher power doesn't care the way I talk to my higher power. My mom would really disagree with me on that one. But you know, I figure that God knows who I am. God knows me intimately. And if my higher power, who created me, if my higher power created me in my entirety and made me perfectly human, my higher power knows my thoughts anyway. So if I get off the bus and I'm having a particularly bad day, I can speak the way I want to my higher power. My higher power just says to me, honey, it's okay. I've gotten off the bus. I don't know why it's the bus. Buses and me have issues apparently sometimes. And I get off the bus and I go, I don't effing want to do this program anymore. Life isn't going the way I want and I'm not having a good time. And you know, I can scream at God, preferably in my head, because if you're walking down the street, people look at you as though you have three heads, trust me. Try it a couple times, you'll understand. So God says to me, honey, it's okay. I get it, and I love you. You can have feelings, they're just feelings, sweetheart. You don't have to want to do this program. You just have to do it. It's like, damn it. Okay. And slowly my life begins to change. And my concept of God begins to change. And I start to have a God that says, that I trust, because my God, it starts to have a track record. And my God loves me. You know, in the essence, my God had some other character descriptions, but in the end, it's just my God loves me. And my God wanted me to be perfect, my God would have created me perfect. And I'm a spiritual being having a very human experience, very, very human. And that's okay. You know, that's just okay. God was scary. God's not as scary anymore. Thanks for listening.
Is it any wonder I adore her so? So I don't know if that's prompted anybody to feel the need to share, but you're welcome to come up at this time. I know that I've gone through that same exercise of taking pen and paper and trying to write down, okay, what is it? What do I need to have a higher power that I can believe in and trust? And that was the exercise for me. Is not a question of what do I want God to look like? Is what do I need God to look like? So I don't see anybody coming up, so we'll just keep moving. We heard a little bit last night from David. I'm pretty sure that if God ever started up a comedy duo, David would be the other half of it. Because I just have this sense from spending some time with him that he and God joke around a lot. So with that, we're going to call David up to share.
My name's David.
Hi, David.
Grateful member of Al-Anon.
I came at Al-Anon and I was an atheist, but I was certain God was going to kill me for feeling that way. And I was baptized Catholic. I didn't have to go through catechism. The alcoholism in my family got so bad by the time I came around, we were like, we ain't going, you know? And I have some very, very limited memories of church growing up. I remember once in church, I went to church. My dad said to me, if you're good, after church, we'll get ice cream. And I was like, oh, so if I'm compliant and obedient, I'll get a prize. And later it was then told to me that we're not going to get ice cream after church because I'm broke. And then the collection plate came around. And he put money in the collection plate, and I just screamed at the top of my lungs, you told me you were broke! You know, and then I yelled, I have to go to the bathroom. And in my family, religion wasn't really foisted upon me, which is actually kind of a good thing, because I kind of came into Al-Anon. Like I said, I came in atheist, but certain God was going to kill me for feeling that way. And how I've come to believe in Al-Anon is, I'm really, really grateful how I've come to believe in Al-Anon is, it's been of the educational variety for me. It wasn't a blinding white light experience for me. I have a higher power who talks to me through music. I have a higher power who talks to me through when I watch a movie and I see something in a movie that really like pulls at my heartstrings. That's God winking at me. When I was a newcomer, there was a song that I really, really liked. And in the song, it said, I want to be something more than the clay in your hands. More than the mud in your eyes. I want to be the clay in your hands. And that's step three to me. As I want to be something more than the mud in your eyes. I want to be the clay in your hands. Also, what I was taught as a newcomer in Al-Anon was I was taught to read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a lot of controversy happens in Al-Anon sometimes when people mention the Big Book. It's where I found my higher power, and how I was taught to read the Big Book is I was taught to read the Big Book in present tense and in first person. That's how I was taught to read the Big Book. So how I was taught to read the Big Book, I'll just really quick say this thing. It said that lack of power, that was David's dilemma. Or that is David's dilemma. That's my problem, is that I don't have a power. My power isn't sufficient enough to recover from the family disease of alcoholism. Is that my power rendered me so useless when it came to trying to recover from alcoholism that I had to come to you. That's how bad my power worked. My power worked so bad that I had to come to Al-Anon. That's pretty powerless, actually, when you think about it. Like, I had to come to Al-Anon. It's folding metal chairs for the rest of my life. You know, I had to come to Al-Anon. That's how bad it was for me. You know, I had to come to Al-Anon, and I had to buy into all of it. And the stuff that I didn't agree with was just stuff that I didn't agree with. I was so grateful when I was new in Al-Anon that I found people who said, you don't have to agree with everything here. You don't have to agree with everything here. If it's not part of your experience, then you don't have to agree with it. And how I find a higher power was through that sponsor, that really mean sponsor when I got here. He said, the only thing that you really need to know about God is it's not you. You know, that's the only thing you need. Guys like you need to know about God is it's not you. You know, and what I'm so grateful for in Al-Anon is that in doing that step two exercise, when I wrote down all the people I love in Al-Anon and why I love them, when I give that exercise to the people I sponsor, what I love now is we get to go through that list, and invariably they're never on the list. Invariably they're never on the list. And I go, wait a minute, aren't you a member of Al-Anon? And they go, well, yeah, I'm a member of Al-Anon. And I go, well, what do you love about you? You know, because God has no stepchildren. I heard that in Al-Anon, that God has no stepchildren. You know, I learned that in Al-Anon, and I'm a precious child of God, and I didn't know that when I walked in here. And the only reason why I know that now is because you people have shown me that I'm a precious child of God. In the way that you treat me. In the way that you treat me. And I like to listen to a lot of speaker tapes like my friend Richard. And there's a guy I really love in Alcoholics Anonymous who talks about, and I just think this is so wonderful. At some time in Alcoholics Anonymous, at some time in the program, in his step two, he would read step two and go, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And he said, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But if you asked him, as it was my experience, if you came, have you come to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore David Knox to sanity? For the first 3.5 years in program, it was no. It was no. And what happened was, is I had to let go of some prejudices. And all prejudices are preconceived notions. That's all they are. And I just had to let go of some of my preconceived notions of what I thought God was. You know, some people talk about today the Santa Claus God, you know, or the parking space God. What am I supposed to do if I find a parking space? Give it to someone else? I had to find a power in which I could live and rely upon. And how I found that was by working the steps. That's the only reason why, that's the only way I found that. You know, and I have a higher power who's crazy about me now, who has my picture on his refrigerator. You know, who wants me to be happy, not only who wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, but who is eager for me to be happy, joyous, and free. Who's like, come on, David, join me on the broad highway. Come on, David. You know, and what I love about Al-Anon and I love about the 12-step programs is God's inclusive, never exclusive. Like, I can never do something so bad that my higher power would just kind of go, oh, wow, that was an interesting choice. No, that was an interesting choice, you know. And what's so funny is that I had to let go of like what my conception of what I thought God was, you know. And it's so nice to be able to like kind of let go of what those conceptions are, you know. Thank you so much for talking about. I don't think I'm more blessed than anybody out there. I'm lucky. I'm a lucky guy. I think God's grace shines upon everybody. It's just what happened was on October the 13th, 1997, I felt my powerlessness. I felt my powerlessness. And what Al-Anon affords me, and I'm so glad what Al-Anon affords me to do, is to get off my oxygen hose. Stop stepping on your oxygen hose. Really quick, and I'll end with this. For many years in Al-Anon, for my first 3 years in Al-Anon, I actually used to say from the podium that I was a recovering Catholic. And then a priest actually came up to me and said, could you not say that? And I was so like ready to fight. I was so like ready to argue. I was like, oh, this is where the Catholic Church gets both barrels, you know? And he said, could you not say that? And I said, why? And he said it so wonderfully. He said, because it hurts my feelings. And then he got me and he said, what if the newcomer's Catholic? Can they now not be a member of Al-Anon because of your prejudice? Ugh. You know, and then he also reminded me if Catholicism's the problem, there's no solution, David. If it's your perception, if it's how you're affected by alcoholism, we have a shot. But if it's the institution, ironically, we have a whole inventory that covers institutions as well. And I stopped saying that from that point forward because I don't know who the newcomer is. And what if they're Catholic? And what if my prejudice chases them out of Al-Anon? You know, and then what's weird is God put a man in my life who was Catholic. And we got to talk about God all the time. It's fun. It's really just, it's so funny. If you'd have told me, you know, 17 years ago and change that I'd be talking to people about God, I'd have laughed at you. You know, I'd have laughed at you. But I have a higher power whom I choose to call God. you know, and I got that through you, and I got that through doing stuff like this. So thank you for letting me share.
The chairs aren't filling up, but we're making good time. You know, it's been my observation that I learned early here that coincidence is God's way of staying anonymous, or as our friend Jack C. likes to say, is it odd or is it God? As many of you know, Karen and I relocated a couple of months ago to Winnipeg, and that was a very hard decision for us. We took the third step on it together and asked our higher power to show us where he would have us be. And in the process of doing that, so many little coincidences have cropped up that we know we're where we need to be. You know, we have this kitchen cabinet that was custom made for our house here in Saskatoon. It was for a specific spot in that house. We get to our new house, and there's this corner next to the entryway closet that is exactly the right size for this custom-made cabinet that we had done here. You know, that I look at that and go, okay, is this coincidence or is somebody saying something? You know, good one, right? At the same time, I got to witness an exchange between Sarah and my beloved yesterday. Karen said to Sarah about our move to Winnipeg that, you know, if we'd known now, if we'd known then everything that we know now, if we'd known everything we'd have to go through to get this move accomplished, we would have said no. And Sarah said, isn't it a wonderful gift that God kept that knowledge from you until you needed it? So it seems to me that this is a lady who knows a little something about a loving God. And I'm going to get Sarah up to share.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
I'm going to do this. I've always wanted to be taller. I am a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. I'm from California, and I am so thrilled to be here. The friendly people reputation that preceded you is completely true, and I've had a really great time, so I want to thank you. There's a saying in Al-Anon that says, you know, we get to be God with skin on it, and honestly, that's kind of what I felt, is that you guys are all, like, showing me God's love, and I appreciate that. As far as the topic, came to believe, I totally agree with so many things that have already been shared about it being a process. Oh, I just almost said your way, process. I say process, but process. About it being a process. And also that the steps, I really believe this, that the purpose of the steps is to get to this relationship with a higher power and sort of to figure out how that works, the creator-createe relationship. And for me, it really has been a process. From day one, I came in here super angry, lots of religious residue. My dad is a pastor, I'm a PK, and it definitely, the church was on my fourth step inventory, for sure. What I can tell you is that I still think it's one of our most magic phrases or slogans here is, you know, take what you like and leave the rest. And I learned that from the very beginning. And I have since applied that concept everywhere that I go, whether it's in a meeting, whether it's at church, or sometimes I go to funerals of other denominations, or I may be sitting in a lunchroom with people that, you know, believe and feel differently about political issues than I do. I take what I like and leave the rest. And it has become an adapter, like you plug it in to the phone or whatever, into the wall and I can plug into something, I am able to go to places and be with people I normally could not mix with because I have this tool, this detachment tool that I can feel differently than you feel, and it's okay. And I can be uncomfortable with a concept and still be willing and open to listen to it, to hear more. And that has led me, you know, to more growth, to just this openness. So I will share with you, I went to a workshop once long ago and on this topic, and they asked us to close our eyes and think about the primary parent who raised us. Some of us had one, some of us had two, but and in thinking about that, what would that parent be thinking of us right now? And then we had this moment where we thought about what that parent would be thinking about us. And then she said, is that how you think God thinks of you? And it just sort of rocked me because I have always known that I was loved. And when I was thinking about what my mom or my dad was thinking of me, I knew that they delighted in me. I knew that my parents loved me. My issue is they cannot take care of me. And that rocked me because I realized that was the core of my issue with God, is that I think I probably am on his refrigerator as well. And I really believe that that God loves me and God is love and he's all powerful and blah, blah, blah. He's got better ideas than I do. And, you know, that whole how high is your higher power? He's pretty high and all of that. But is he going to take care of me? And, you know, I have never really felt protected, provided for, ever. My whole life, I grew up very unsafe. And so this has been a continual surrender, a third step, a daily reprieve, a third step surrender, that I am turning my will and my life over to the care of God. I know that's step three and we're on step two, but it's all, to me, runs together. And so I share that with you because I have had to do so much work around this. Again, my issue is not if there's a God or if, you know, if God is big enough. My issue is he going to care for me? Is he going to provide for me? And so I've, you know, done the work. You know, I had to catalog all the ways that God has cared for me. And I had to go back to some of the hardest situations when I did my fifth step. Actually, I worked the steps, and then I went back and did some work on this. So I think that what the steps did for me, working the steps all the way through, is it sort of like you said so beautifully, it sloughed off all this crap and sort of cleared the channel. So after working the steps, I could hear better in meetings. And when I read things, it came in. It's like it could be absorbed. Before I worked the steps, I don't think that anything was getting in there. I'd get little pieces here and there. But really, it's been this sloughing off this. And I just read this in our literature about the birch wood, how we talk about the peeling of the onion. But really, it's more like a birch wood tree, in that if you pull at the tree prematurely, you will scar it. But if the tree naturally sloughs off its protection, it's actually stronger. It grows stronger, and it will naturally release, you were talking about this too, it will naturally release what it doesn't need. And that's been the process of the steps for me, is this natural letting go of what I no longer need to protect myself. And so then I went back and I did the work. Anyways, I went back into the most painful moments of my story, and it was really difficult, but I actually sat there with my sponsor, and actually this one experience, it was with a friend of mine who has time in the program, and sometimes our experiences are not exactly with a sponsor, but you know what I mean? It felt like it was with a safe, protected person with time who loved me, and I went back to these moments of great pain and looked for God. Where were you when this happened? And what were you saying to me? And I had some tender moments where I could hear God whispering, I am here. I am with you. We will get through this. It's going to be okay. You know, and I believe that he wept with me when those things happened to me, I don't think that those things happened and they were part of God's big plan. I think that God is like, man, it sucks to be down in that world, and I'm not going to abandon you there. And I am with you, and I have the power to bring good out of this situation. Just watch what I'm going to do with you. And honestly, that changed for me. So I can't change my past, but I have gotten the ability by working the steps to change my perception of the past. So I do see it differently. Evil is evil. So I don't know who said it, but like it's hard for me to say everything happens for a reason. I have trouble with that one too, because evil is evil. And I don't think that God is a fan of evil. At least I can't believe that. But I do think that God is so big and so powerful and so loving that he has the capacity to bring good out of any situation. And this whole concept of God the Father, that's a struggle for me. And actually, I've been in this long journey, but the concept of God as my king, I like to think of myself as I'm a daughter of the king. And when I think about God's kingdom and how far-reaching it is and his amazing resources and the clout that I have by saying I am a daughter of the king, I stand a little taller. I feel a little bit like I have a heritage worth passing on. You know, like I feel valuable and worthy, not because of who I am, but because of who I belong to. And that changed everything for me. And that was a concept that I didn't know I could ever embrace, but it helped me. It helped me feel this feeling of like, not only do I belong here, but anywhere I go, I am not alone. Because for a while, and you'll hear this tonight when I share my story, but my sponsor was God. My sponsor was my higher power. And the problem with having a higher power that's human, well, I don't even need to go into that. You know, there's lots of problems with that. And that whole like falling off a pedestal pain, I've been through that over and over, and I don't want to be on anyone's pedestal. And I don't want to be your God and you can't be my God. And that whole thing is just, the problem with all of that is my sponsor couldn't go everywhere with me. And my sponsor wasn't with me when I was taking my last, awake moment at night. And that's when I'm in the most pain, it seems, like when I'm thinking about my day. Like, my sponsor just would not sleep with me. And I asked. But anyway, so that's when it became really apparent to me that how high is your higher power? That God had to be big enough and loving enough to be with me everywhere. And I'll tell you, this is still a struggle for me. I'm a single mom, and so my go-to reaction is, no one's going to do it for me. I got to do it for myself. And honestly, it is like this tangible, intentional cry that I have every morning. God, I am trusting you. I am turning over my kids to you. I'm turning over my dreams. I'm turning over my desires. I'm turning over my past, my intentions, my motives. I believe you have a better plan than what I could do on my own. So I'm going to plug into you and trust that you are trustworthy and that you are here going to take care of me. Because I really think, I don't know who else said it, but he's got better things to do. And I just have always been like that. So that's my ongoing thing. So I guess I'm still coming to believe, if you will. Anyways, I hope that made sense. Thank you.
And of course, the side benefit of including Sarah in this lineup is that now you really, really want to come back here after the banquet tonight. So Melissa would like to come up and share.
I'm not nervous talking as the voice, but boy, it's nerve-wracking to be sharing who I am. So my name is Melissa, and I'm grateful to be here.
Hi.
I've always felt blessed to have known there was something bigger than me. As a young girl, I was in Catholic school and remember debating with one of my best friends who was Baptist. I wasn't baptized Catholic, but I went to school Catholic because it was closest to my house. It's true. I remember I was like 10 or 11 years old, and she told me I would burn in hell because I wasn't Baptist. And I remember in the sleepover saying, I don't think so. I think, and I so visually remember this, saying, God is like the number 8, and there's infinite ways to get to the number 8, and my way doesn't have to be your way. We just have to get there. And so cool to have had that understanding so young. And outside of the program, having multiple blessings where I know there is something way bigger than me, the day I heard my son's heartbeat and the day I heard my daughter's heartbeat, there is nothing more profound for me to know I didn't do that. I didn't decide the day their hearts would start. Something way better than me did that. So I felt really blessed. When I was in the program, when I started, I struggled with the concept of God. I could say yes to a higher power, something bigger than me, but this concept of God was still attached to Catholic school and attached to being other, being different, being less than. And so I struggled with that. And when I started going to a meeting that I have now found a place to call home, they would say the Lord's Prayer. And at first I was defiant, like, you guys can say it, but your eyes are all closed and you can't tell that I'm not saying it. I really struggled with the Lord's Prayer until I watched a film called Heaven is for Real. And if you haven't seen it, I believe it's worth an hour and a half of your time. It was a game changer for me on many levels. So many levels, I could cry just thinking about it. But one thing that was so profound was they talked about the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I always understood that meaning, if I'm good here, I get it great there. And maybe I understood it wrong, but I learned it from somewhere. So I had this idea that I had to be good here so that I could get better there. And this film flipped that and said, it is here. Heaven is here. In the giggles of our children and in the leaves that fall and in all the things that make you pause in the day and that you feel blessed by. And that was like, that has come back to me so many times when I hear my kids laugh or any time where I realize heaven is here and it is on earth and that's what we're experiencing. Today I heard thy will be done. I never got that before. Oh, like his. Your will is what you want me to do. Pretty cool that I just got that today. So, but the power of this program, you all know, but for me it is that I can now not only say the Lord's Prayer, but believe the Lord's Prayer and bought it to hang in my bedroom.
Wow.
Yeah, like huge. So that's what I thought of, especially when Shara was sharing. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
For me, I guess I was fortunate that I didn't have a wrathful God or an angry God that I grew up with, and I did grow up going to church every Sunday. But like my mom was the one that took us to church, and we went to the United Church, which gave us pretty much the most liberal God that there was. So I was always sort of thankful for that. And I went through all kinds of stages from, oh, I have to go. Like that was the little contract between me and my mom was I could do whatever I wanted Friday night, Saturday night, as long as I got up on Sunday and went to church and showed up and whatever. And I would go through phases of, okay, I'm just going through the motion to where like I just firm, like when I was confirmed at 14, I was like, yes, God, yay. And I taught Sunday school. And then I'd go in these waves of really believing and not sure what I'm believing. And I had a father who was Catholic who would not come to church with us. And that was the big thing. My mom would take us all by herself. And when I got married, I was told by my husband that we had to baptize our children or his mom would never talk to us again. And so I went to church again after not going to church for a long, long time so that I could make this relationship with this minister so we could go baptize our children. And I would take them. I had the same relationship that my mom had where my husband stayed at home and I dragged the kids. And it was exhausting because my children are not ones that will sit upstairs. And so we would be downstairs by ourselves in the little room with the crackly speaker. And I'm like, what am I getting out of this? This is so much work. And for me, my God was just not an, it was too much work for me. I didn't feel I was getting anything out of it. And then what kept me from God was my perceived intelligence. I'm a science teacher, and it was this idea of this random, this just belief in a God that you can't see is for these feeble-minded, weak people. I'm this intelligent, logical person. I can't. Like, so I actually belonged to groups, the Skeptic Society and the Free Thinkers, and we were on our pedestal, like, we are so much smarter than the rest of the world because we don't need that. We don't need that, you know, security because we can do this ourselves. And it was, and I even see that in my kids. There was a conversation in my home, and my oldest boy and his brother, they're having this, I don't know what they were arguing about, and said something about God. And my middle son said, well, when did you start believing in God? And the oldest one said, well, when did you stop? And he goes, well, as soon as I could think logically. And this is the way we discuss God in my home. Logic and God didn't go together. And that kept me out of these rooms for a long time because, thank goodness, and talk about higher power intervening, I just happened to have a therapist who kept sort of gently saying to me, you know, you might want to think about Al-Anon. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. And every, you know, we'd have these great sessions. And at the very end, he'd kind of slip in a, oh, you know what? Here's a meeting list. You might want to, there's this really good one on Wednesday. Like, maybe you want to go check. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. And I'd sort of smile and nod and go, okay, yeah, I'll think about it. Going out, going, there's no way. And I couldn't even bring myself to think about going to a program that had the word God in it. And there's sometimes today even where the word God just kind of, sticks on. I don't have any problem saying higher power. Higher power to me, you know, is, you know, la, but there was that thing about, and it was this idea that I couldn't be intelligent and strong and have this belief system at the same time. And thank goodness that I was in so much friggin' pain, I got to the point where, okay, whatever, I'll try this because I don't know what else to do. And for me, what happened was a friend of mine was in another 12-step program. I had no idea. We started at the same time. Also, I mean, we met at grad school. Another highly intelligent, you know, I'm telling you I'm highly intelligent. Anyways, another highly intelligent woman and who I never would have thought also would, you know, have a belief. You know, a different belief system. And we just happened to, we were saying, well, let's do some self-care. We went to a yoga class, and it was at that class, I had the hamster wheel going. I could not turn it off. And all day I said, let it go. Just let it go. Let this man go. Like, you know, this is no good for you. This is toxic. Let it go. And I knew that. But every time I said, let it go, I went like this, even tighter. And it's like, let it go. And I just couldn't, like, there was claw marks everywhere. And it's what I had to do, but I didn't know how to do it. And I didn't have the tools to do it. I didn't know how to do it. I knew I wanted to, but I didn't know how. And we were at this class, and this instructor came in, and the entire class was about letting go. And he read this little excerpt from a book that he said he was going to bring into the studio. And it was about this woman, and she was protesting logging, and she's living in a tree in California, I believe it was, and she was there for like 2 years, and they couldn't cut the tree down while she was up there, and it was an El Nino year, so there's these huge storms, and the wind comes, and she's getting blown off her perch, and she's like clinging on to this branch, and she knows if I fall, I am going to die. I am going to die here. And she's trying to hang on, and she's scared, and she thinks she's going to die. And then suddenly she says she looked around, and this calmness came over her, and she saw the trees, and she realized that the ones that were bending and swaying were okay, and the ones that were standing strong and erect were breaking off. And she said at that moment she knew she was going to be okay, that the trees that they to let go they were okay. And she started actually swaying with the branch and whooping and like celebrating. And she knew that she was not going to die that day. And he read this story, and it just, for the very first time the whole day, my brain went quiet, and it hadn't done that before. And I let go, and the lights were dimmed, and we're laying there, and I remember these sort of hot tears coming down. It was almost like toxins leaving my body, and I had my first, I would say, spiritual experience. And I went up to him afterwards, and I said, you know, I couldn't have ordered any more perfect yoga class. Like, I was struggling with spirituality, I was struggling with letting go, and you did that. And he just looked at me and goes, you must have been the reason why I felt I had to bring this book today. And I was like, whoa. And that was when I suddenly had a concept of my God for me, my higher power. And it was this understanding. All of a sudden, it's like I had flashbacks to all these moments, these difficult, scary moments in my life. And in those moments of darkness, there was always someone there. There was always someone there for me. When I left my husband, I had no place to go. I had a friend who said, come here. And she welcomed me in. And she was part of my life at that moment when I needed her. And times, there's other, like all these other things that have my life. There's always someone there. It was suddenly this understanding that no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. I'm always going to be okay. And that was my higher power. And I was able to come to terms with the idea that I don't have to logicize this. I don't have to know how it works, but I can come to believe that I'm always going to be okay. And that, for me, is my God. Thank you.